So now, after completing the artik,
then
one should blow the conch shell. And Krishna Kshetra mentions that for a full artik, generally it's like 20-25 minutes, and dupartiks maybe from 5 to 8 minutes. And after completing the artik, then one blows the conch shell and distributes the argya and the flower prasadam. Then the Premadvani mantras will be chanted. So if generally if you're having devotees are there, then the devotees will do that chanting. And if not, then the Panchari can do the chant the Premadvani, especially if, except for the deities, Panchari is the only one there. And then after, then one will offer obeisances if one's outside. And if one is inside, one will just offer pranam to the deities after everything has been distributed. Then remove the artik paraphernalia and clean the area and clean the paraphernalia. Then you offer your... And after the room is clean, then offer your dandavats outside the deity room. And then one can clean the paraphernalia and keep them back properly where they were. Now we notice in here that, which will come up later, that we're offering respects to the deities after we have distributed all the prasad and everything. This is an important part. When we get to the 16th item in the main puja, then we'll see that after distributing everything to the devotees and all these things, then we have the where we offer obeisances ourselves, or offer ourselves to the deity, offer our service. Sometimes we find that the pujaris, they like to, after offering the artik and blowing the conch, they like to stand in front of the deities so that everybody can watch them offer prayers to the Lord. And then after they have, you know, satisfied the Lord with their prayers, then they turn and in their benevolence then distribute the flowers and argya water to the devotees that are waiting there. But the recommended process is the other way around. The worship isn't finished. In other words, when the worship is finished, then you offer your prayers and yourself to the Lord. So until the prasadam has been distributed, the offering is not finished. Means the artik is not finished. So that part is must be done first. Then we can stand there and offer prayers to the deities and all that, then clean the deity room. We should be very careful about that, that we don't add something new, start some new thing. You know, I mean, of course, it's nice. Everyone likes to be seen worshiping the Lord in front of the deities. You know, it's very popular. You always have the life members in that, and they don't mind paying money to stand close to the deities so that everybody can see them doing something. Right? Most get worried, well, they want to bathe the deity, so they're life members, they have to do something special, so they should be able to pour the water on the deity at the Abhishek, this, that. But those who know this kind of personality know they want to do some service, but along with that, it's not that they just do service and only they know about it and God knows about it. But they want to do some service, and it's nice if others know about it, especially other life members, like that. Common people know, who cares? Like that. But the others know that you are doing. So you have to make, so then in this case, you make special arrangement for them so they can be standing in the front, even though they're not bathing the deity. They just bring the pot of water and hand it to the pujari, but they're in the front and they're standing there, and everybody else is not so close. And then they can stand there with folded hands, looking, you know, very, being as devotional as they are able to do. And the other life members can watch this. Then they feel very satisfied because they've done some service, because they know you can't go to a big temple and expect to obey the deity. They all know that. They've all been to Tirupati and Srinadji and all these different temples. They know you can't. So it's not that they're expecting they're going to give 1,000 rupees and be able to do that. I mean, I think it's in Tirupati, if you give 3,000 rupees, you can stand there for 20 minutes while they dress the deity and just watch. You know, so they're not expecting that I give 1,000 rupees or I give something and then I can bathe the deity. You know, they know that. So they want to be able to go and be close, and the Lord recognizes their service, and at the same time as they'd like to let others in their community know that they are also very devotional and they have done something for the deity. So it's a nice balance. So you have to understand that mentality. So we should be very careful ourselves that we do not take up the mood where we want to be seen and recognized by others while we offer our prayers and do all these different things. That should be after everything is completed, and that then we can stand on the side, maybe something like this, if the curtains don't have to be closed immediately. But more important is finishing the artik, distributing everything, cleaning the place and all that. These are the important aspects. Okay. Okay. Any questions on the artik? This finishes the artik, yes.
The large conch shell that one blows, This is normally kept just outside the altar area and doesn't really go in, or it goes back and forth?
Generally, the conch would go back and forth. The unless the altar is very close to where you're blowing the conch. But if it's not, if there's a little distance between the deity doors and the altar where you're offering, you'll take the conch shell and the lota to the door, blow the conch, then after washing it, keep the lota and the conch at the door. Then go back in, do the artik, then after come back, blow the conch, but this time after washing, you'll take it back inside and keep it in its place. So it's if the conch is washed, there's no problem in bringing it back inside.
Right.
You know.
So some pujaris and even GBC men seem to have an idea that the conch shell, because it is blown and washed, and must somehow stay outside of, like, you know, what you'd normally term it.
I don't think it's so important, because the point is the conch is pure. It purifies water. So just by pouring water on it properly, it becomes purified. That's not a problem. Otherwise, it is part of the Lord's paraphernalia. We must remember that. And the Lord likes the conch to be blown. So then if we leave it outside, it may be unprotected and that. Generally, it'll be kept inside when it's not being used. But as we discussed before, it's how it sits on the lota is important. It has to be in a horizontal.
I see virtually everywhere people like to just...
Yeah, well, that's because maybe that's why the GBC and the Pujaris have decided it should be outside. Because you blow it, you wash it, you pour water on it, and then you turn it upside down. You know, so it's vertical, so all the water that's inside that you were supposed to have washed it with runs back into the water to wash it with again. But then, according to that, then you've touched that, you've touched the thing, you put it like that, nothing's become purified. So now you should actually go wash your hands. Going back in and just doing achman's not enough. You know, so it's the point is it has to be kept horizontally on the conch, on the lota, so that the excess water, if it hasn't dripped out, that it won't fall into the clean water into the lota.
And the bowl you rinse into will normally always be just
outside. That will be outside. The bowl that you pour the water into for cleaning the conch, that's always outside. I mean, if somebody wants to run off with that, then, you know, it's their their problem, you know. But that's generally where that's always kept outside.
Now, we had actually a very nice conch covered in silver disappear because people were insisting it's kept
Yeah, so like that, then you lose the Lord's paraphernalia. But I mean, you could also consider, well, we stand on the floor, you know, so, you know, we're not that qualified and all that because it's touched us. So therefore, like Ramanuja, when he went to Tirupati, he went from the bottom, Tirumala, which is the city, when he went up to take darshan of the deity, and while he did puja up there, and then when he went down, he went on his knees. He didn't walk because he figured the whole mountain is auspicious because the Lord's sitting on it. So one could consider doing that. You could just walk, go in on one's knees, and then, you know, do the artik. You always might be a little surprised that, you know, who's the midget doing the artik. But
it is a book.
Yeah. So like that, one has to look at the whole complete picture. The conscious being blown outside, not because it's dirty, but because inside the deity room, it's such a small place, it becomes very, very loud. And the point of blowing the conscious to announce that the artik is going to start and to make an auspicious atmosphere. So in the deity room, the Lord knows the artik is going to start, the pujari knows it's going to start, and it's already an auspicious atmosphere. So now the conch, blowing of the conch, is more for the benefit of those who are outside. So it's done outside. And then after blowing, then it can be washed and kept there outside, and then after the artik moved in. So we shouldn't confuse that the conch is blown outside with that it must be kept outside because of its untouchable nature, having been touched by us. Mm. Like that. We also have to be very, very careful about the principle of thinking also too badly about the pujaris and all that. Just like in the Shastra, see, if anybody kills themselves, then they get the result of becoming a ghost. But now if a Brahmin kills himself, not only does he become a ghost, but he also gets the reaction of killing a Brahmin. Like that. So this aspect of the Brahmin is something that's even separate from ourselves. Because the work and all the activity, they're doing service for the deity, they belong to the deity, they're part of the paraphernalia of the deity. So it's another category. One has to be very, very careful. It's also in the Dharma Shastras, it says that the Brahmin women, they don't perform sati because of this fact of killing a Brahmin. It means they're killing a Brahmani. It means the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, the Shudras, they would do, but the Brahmins wouldn't do. They would become recluses and, you know, wherever, go to a holy place or stay at the family home or, you know, something like that. They would not enter the fire like that because of this rule. Also generally because they would be able to follow because of being situated in goodness, while the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas and the Shudras, because of the passion, the ignorance, it might be difficult for them to maintain the vows. So it was best to, you know, go while the going was glorious, you know, you know, like that. So for the Vaishnavs, then those who have, you know, especially ourselves, the Gaudiya Vaishnavs, and that's considered that the devotee is the Vaishnava, is the perfect Brahman. Like that, perfection of Brahma. So anyone with that is surrendered, is taken, you know, shelter of the Gaudiya Vaishnav line, is considered as a Vaishnav, as Brahman. So the culture then goes for anyone. Okay. So now in the main 16 items. Then the first thing, then, is after collecting all the various paraphernalia, then we bring the things in. It's going to be one or the other. It's generally easier to bring everything in and place everything down, you know, in a general place. Or you just bring the tray and put it down so everything is right there at the point where you're going to do the puja. And one should bring everything, check everything nicely, that one has everything, right? Then the next thing one does is one performs asan stapana. That means you establish an asana in which you're going to perform the puja. So then after everything is there, the asana is in place, then while kneeling, you know, you don't sit on the asana because you're going to respect the asana. Then with this mantra, Pitvi Tvaya Dritha Loka Deva Tvam Vishnuna Dritha. Dritha, excuse me. Tvam Cha Dharayamam Nityam Pavitram Chashanam Kuru. O Mother Earth, O Goddess, you support all the world's people, and Lord Vishnu sustains you. Please be merciful today and support me as I sit to worship the Lord. And then the spirit, one understands the spiritual master will be there. One sits on this asana. So one is taking the blessings from Bhumi Devi to sit. We must always recognize that it is by her grace that we're moving around. Many times we just take it for granted. We get up in the morning, we walk around wherever we like. But we're only being supported because she allows that. She supports us. So her supporting us, then that makes, we must recognize that. That this aspect that the Lord's consort, Bhumi Devi, she is supporting us. She's being supported by the Lord, and she is supporting us. So she's giving a place. So we recognize that she is giving us a place that we can come and do worship for the Lord. Because sthan is one of the aspects of the puja. When we deal with the paraphernalia, there must be sthan, there must be a place. Otherwise, without place, how you'll do something? Right? Just like you go somewhere and you want to do something, but there's no space. So you can't do it because you say there's no place. You know, I wanted to do this, but there was no place. So getting place is, we may take it for granted. We just go into the pujari room, plunk ourselves down, and it's natural. But that is the grace of the Lord that we get place. So many things we want to do, we don't get place. So that we get a place, then that is by the Lord's grace. So we recognize that by worshiping the earth. So we offer these prayers to the asan we're going to sit on while kneeling next to it. And then after we sit. Right? Now ideally, once we sit, now we shouldn't have to get up. Unless there's some emergency or you finish some part of the puja that requires some, you know, the Lord will move or, you know, something happens. But the best thing is whatever you need for the puja is there when you, at this point. The idea is once sitting, you should sit through the whole puja. That is the proper thing. You know? That shows someone, if there's no need to get up, then that shows someone who is expert at pujas, that they know how to get all the paraphernalia, they didn't forget everything. Everything is arranged. So they can sit and do the whole puja from beginning to end. Just like cooking. Someone who's good at cooking, they arrange everything beforehand. It's all there. You sit, you start the cooking, you don't get up until you're finished. Like that. Well, if you don't, then you sit down to cook and then you forget, oh, the pot. You know, then you run and get the pot while the fire is on, then you put the pot on. And then you think, okay, great, oh, where's the ghee? Then you run off and get the ghee. Then you come and put the ghee into the pot. And then the ghee starts smoking. And then you go, oh, the spices. And run off and get the spices. And then you throw in the spices. And as they're starting to burn, then you go, whoa, where's the sabji? And then run off for the sabji. And then throw that into the pot. And then, you know, try to figure out where's the lid, where's the spoon, all this kind of thing. So good cook, everything's already there. They just start and it runs. So in the same way as a good pujari, they bring in everything. And when everything's there, then they sit. They do asanasthapana. Then after asanasthapana, then you sit and nicely arrange all the paraphernalia, where it should go, how you're going to use it. So in arranging these things, then you want to place everything so it can be easily accessible. So you'll have your bell will be more to the left for your left hand, because you'll ring it with your left hand. Achman cups, and that will be to the right. All the bathing paraphernalia will be in the front. Then you'll have nicely all the clothes and other articles on the sides, whatever you require. And then behind you will be your water, behind you so you can reach it, the water for washing the hands and things like that. And you should have a place where, an empty place where once you've offered paraphernalia, it goes to that place. So no boga touches prasadam. No mixing is there. So there should be a place arranged for that. Thing, you know, your pots for throwing things, the visarjan patras for the water, other things that you may be offering to the deities. Okay. Yeah, and anything that you have, paraphernalia, unless it's on a stand or it's, you know, something that it's definitely, yeah. If it's on a stand, fine, it's sitting on the floor. But if it's not in a stand, it should be in a plate. Like that. Like the conch is on a stand, bell should be on a plate. Your clothes for the deities, your other things to offer, should, you know, for artik and that, should be on plate. Shouldn't be directly on the floor. Right? One may say, well, why? What's the problem? Then, why are we sitting on an asan? Somehow or another, we are sitting on something. So the paraphernalia should also be sitting on something, unless it has its own something. You know, like that. Like many times, like the pot for lotus for bathing water and that, you generally see many of them on the bottom. There's a little stand or something like that. They're meant for that. They stand like that. But most of your other paraphernalia, it may need to be in something. You know, your clothes and other mentions here. Bathing towels, you know, should be there. You don't put them on your lap. It means, in other words, nothing's on your lap. Everything's around you in such a way that you can get at it. Either next to you or on a step in front of you or in some way so that very easily one can take care of the paraphernalia for the Lord. Okay. Then the next thing one does is then take the blessings of the spiritual master. Now you've sat, your paraphernalia is ready. So technically now you are ready to start the puja. So now we're going to start. So the first thing we do is take the blessings of the spiritual master. Guru Pankti Namaskar. So we offer some flower or something to the spiritual master, Pushpanjali, to get his attention. We meditate that the spiritual master, he is serving the previous acharyas, and we are then serving him. We take his blessings to assist him in this puja. In other words, he's doing the puja, we're assisting. Then with this mantra, Sri Guru Paramananda Premananda Phalaprada Vrajananda Pradananda Sevayam Manityojaya. My dear spiritual master, who gives the fruit of the highest bliss, the bliss of love of God, please engage me in the blissful service of Sri Krishna, who bestows bliss upon the land of Vraja. So we want to approach the spiritual master who can give us that highest happiness, or happiness of service of Krishna in Vrindavan, service of that person who gives happiness to everybody, service of Krishna. And then offering prayers to Lord Chaitanya and chanting Hare Krishna. Then in this way we get the blessings of the spiritual master, the previous acharyas, Lord Chaitanya, Radha and Krishna. We may begin or take part in assisting the spiritual master with the service. So once this is done, now we can start like that. Any questions on this? No? Okay. Then the next thing we do is purify the hands, because we're going to start offering things and touching things. We do this, it's called Karshuddhi. So one can take a little bit of the water from that pot that we keep behind us, wash the hands, you know, because we've been putting things, doing things and all that, so now we're ready for this. Or we can take a little bit of chandan, just a drop, and put it on the hands and rub the hands together, and then that will create a nice, pleasant smell. You know, because I mean, if you check, you can smell your hands. Sometimes they're not the They don't necessarily smell bad, but they don't smell wonderful, you know, depending on what's the last thing that you touched, you know. Then they may have various odors and all that. So then when one washes a hand or puts a little chandan, that's very natural. So that's very common, this karshuddhi. That way then when you're, everything, you're moving your hands and all these things, everything you touch, then it'll have a pleasant odor. Then we purify the paraphernalia. In other words, we've brought everything. We've made a place to sit. We've made everything ready. In other words, our gross place to sit is there. The paraphernalia's place to sit is there. The deity's place is already. We've made that place arrangement. That will come later. As we mentioned before, the seva, sevya, sevaka. Sevya is the Lord. Seva is the service, right? The paraphernalia. And sevaka is ourselves. So now we've got a place to sit, the paraphernalia has got a place to sit, right? So we have this patrasthapana, you know. So asanasthapana means our place. Patrasthapana means the paraphernalia's place. Then we request the spiritual master, his blessings to start. Then we, after cleaning the hands, we purify the paraphernalia. So we start with the flowers. We do pushpa shuddhi. So flowers are not purified by washing. Other paraphernalia is done by washing, but flowers is not done by washing. Few reasons why you don't wash flowers. One is that flowers are already cooled by nature. You wash them, they become more cold. Second thing is flowers are very expert at holding water. So when you wash flowers, the water actually never comes out. A lot of the water comes out, but they still stay cold and clammy and wet, which is not very impressive. Third thing is when you wash them, you also wash away the smell, which is the very interesting part of flowers. Flowers are nice because they smell. And they also look good, but they smell. That's the most important. Because other things look good, but don't smell. You know? But flowers are special because they smell nice. So you don't want to wash that away. So how it's done is we're very careful when we pick them, see that our hands are clean, we're wearing clean cloth, we're going to put them in a clean basket or whatever we're going to carry them in. In this way we assure the highest standard of cleanliness. We don't pick them off the floor or things like that. We pick them off the bush. The only flowers you can pick off the ground are bokul, because only when they're ripe, they're ready, that they smell nice, they fall off the tree. If they're still on the tree, they're not ready, they don't smell. So either one can see that the area under the bokul tree is very clean and pure, so that the flowers can fall there, you can pick them up. Or another, you know, age-old tradition is you lay down a very nice clean cloth under the bokul tree, and then you wait for them to fall, or you go over and give the tree a gentle nudge to let it know that you've come for some flowers. And then whatever is ready will fall under the cloth, and you can pick them up from the cloth. But if the place is a nice clean area that you can properly clean, then they can also be picked up from the ground. But no other flowers other than bokul can be picked up in this way. So then one brings these flowers, and then now one takes some water, sprinkles it on, you know, with Omastraya Phat. Then, after showing mudras, then one will touch the flowers with a hand in Bijakshara mudra and chant this mantra: Om Pushpe Pushpe Maha Pushpe Supushpe Pushpa Sambhave Pushpe Chayabakirne Hum Fat Swaha. Oh, this has a cha in it, this one. Pushpe Chayabakirne Cha Hum Fat Swaha. And this means, O flowers, O great and auspicious flowers who have appeared from a budding creeper, may you be purified. Then they can be protected with matsya. So that purifies the flowers. Then the paraphernalia, now this is paraphernalia that's all been properly washed and polished and everything, collected and whatever, then keeping. Then one will take some water and do prokshana lightly on there with the same Omastraya Fat, doing the mudras, chakra, denu, mudras. Then one can chant mantra over the paraphernalia, either Kam Bija or Gayatri, or even the deity's Mula Mantra, and then show the Matsya. And then, so that purifies the paraphernalia. Okay? So the first stage was giving a place for ourselves, right? And for the paraphernalia. Now we've purified the paraphernalia. It means a preliminary purification, like that, subtle purification. The next, we go and we purify ourselves. So then the first one is Atmashuddhi. You take some water from there, from the Achman, and sprinkling it on oneself, one chants the Gopal Mantra. And yes, then one does Bhuta Shuddhi. In other words, that does the outside of the body. Now we do the inside of the body. This is called Bhuta Shuddhi. Bhuta means the elements. So we're purifying the earth, water, basically earth, water, fire, air, and ether. We've done with this prokshana. So now we've left with mind, intelligence, and false ego. So that doesn't always get purified by external sprinkling of water. So now we do inside. So we chant these prayers. First one is, I am by nature the eternal servant of Krishna, but because of my bad fortune, I have been inimical toward him from time immemorial. And thus I have identified myself with my body and continuously wandered in the cycle of birth and death in the material world, suffering the burning threefold miseries. Now, as a result of some unimaginable good fortune, my spiritual master's mercy has enabled me to know that I am Krishna's eternal servant, an infinitesimal spiritual being completely apart from the gross and subtle body. And so, by the order of my spiritual master, I have obtained the good fortune of serving his lotus feet and following in his footsteps, the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Shishi Radhe Shamasundar, or whatever the name of the deities are. So here one is recognizing that I am the servant of Krishna because of my misfortune, my improper behavior. I have turned away from the Lord, not someone else's fault. And I am suffering in the material world. Now, by the mercy of the spiritual master, I have again been reawoken to the fact that I am Krishna's servant, and that I am an infinitesimal, small, particle of spiritual energy, and that my business is to serve the Lord. So now, by their blessings, and that I'm not this gross or subtle body. Now, by such great fortune, I have attained the lotus feet of the spiritual master and assisting him in serving the Lord, Lord Chaitanya and Radha and Krishna. So this sets the mood here. And then after that, then we chant this mantra, Naham vipro na chan narapatir napi vaisho na shudro, Naham varni na cha grihapatir no vanashto yatir va, Kintu prodyan nikila paramananda purnam baritabdher, Gopi bartu parakamalayor dasa dasa anudasa. I am not a brahmana, I am not a kshatriya, I am not a vaishya or a shudra, nor am I a brahmacharya, a householder, a vanaprastha or sannyasi. I identify myself only as the servant of the servant of the servant of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. He is like an ocean of nectar, and he is the cause of universal transcendental bliss. He is always existing with brilliance. This is from the Padyavali. Means Rupa Goswami's Book of Prayers, quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 1380. So with these two, then we establish that I am the eternal servant of the Lord and not something else. So this does the technical aspects of Bhuta Shuddhi. Now this is a very, very, how you say? This is like the essence of Bhuta Shuddhi, chanting these two mantras. That by understanding that we're the soul and not the body, then we can establish proper consciousness. When we establish a proper consciousness, we understand that who I am. I am not this body, but I am the eternal servant of Krishna. So that's the ego. So the ego gets changed from I'm this body, gross and subtle bodies, to I'm not. I'm Krishna's servant. Then this corrects the intelligence, which now acts to try to please Krishna, and the mind to think of Krishna. And the mind controls the senses, and the senses are situated in the body. So by these mantras, then what is happening is we are changing, we are performing the Bhuta Shuddhi from the top down. You change the top, automatically the bottom is corrected. Right? So this is a very ideal and a very efficient and the best way of performing the Bhuta Shuddhi. There are also mechanical ways of doing it. We can see that by doing this, it may take us, you know, not very long, some seconds. But there's mechanical processes that are also recommended in the Pancharatra that may take one 15-20 minutes, where one does, after doing pranayama, make the mind peaceful and all that, then one meditates on the body from the inside, moves the soul and the super soul to the top of the head, then with mantras and meditation one destroys the whole body, right? Then one has to recreate it, you know, made out of nectar and put in all the different elements and put in all the senses and the senses and the, what do you call it? Not the sense objects, the tanmatras. Huh? No, you have the senses and you have the sense object and you have the tanmatras in between. You know, the power of smelling, the power of seeing, the power of, you know. You have the eyes, then you have sight, and then you have what you see. In other words, you have to reestablish all these different things and all the different, or you know, you go through everything in the body. It's a whole reinstallation of the body. Then after that's all done and you meditate upon it, different aspects or different colors and all these kind of things, then, you know, and you have different bead syllables for each thing. Then after doing all that, then you bring the soul and super soul back into the heart of the body, and then Bhuta Shuddhi is completed. So the idea is to reconvert this body as a place of ignorance. Sharira avidya jal jatendriya taikal. Like that. It's a place of ignorance. So you take that ignorance, remove that, and replace it with something of a more suitable caliber. But here, so from the bottom up, one's moving. But so that's very nice for those who are very grossly absorbed, at the same time are pious enough to be able to meditate and do that kind of thing. This is the interesting aspect. Why this shows one of the aspects of the superiorness of the Vedic culture over any other kind of aspect, is that those who may not be so advanced, meaning spiritually, but they have determination, they have so many of these good qualities. They have purity, they have patience, they have tolerance, they have all these different things because of practicing the culture, then they develop these good qualities. Like that. While, so when we talk about smartas, and we talk about those who are into karmakanda or jnanakanda, compared to devotional practices, it's considered on a lower platform. But compared to those who are not following the injunctions of the Lord given in the Vedic scriptures, they're situated on a much higher platform because they have all these qualities. So someone on this lower platform then is able to take these mechanical processes and they have the time and patience to go through it and elevate themselves to a higher platform. Right? It takes concentration and patience and all these different things to do this. Well, we see if one doesn't follow the Vedic culture, then generally we don't have these, because that means Vedic culture is situated in goodness. The proper, its main position is there. It means the activities are situated in goodness, the mainstream activities. The person performing the activities may be in passion or ignorance, right? You have these, just like, let's say, a cow. The body is in the mode of goodness, means how it will operate, right? It sleeps less, is pure, you know, it likes to eat sattvic things, it likes to be very regulated. But the living entity itself is not in goodness. The living entity is in ignorance, right? Because it thinks it's an animal, it thinks they're the cow. So one has to be able to see that there is the activity and there's the consciousness of the person performing the activity. Right? So Krishna in the Gita recommends that one performs, you know, austerity is same as penance. Sacrifice, yes. So one can perform those. So it's recommended one does those activities. So those activities are very good. They're recommended in the scriptures. But now one can perform it in three different modes. Knowing what you're doing without desiring a result, the mode of goodness. Knowing what you're doing and expecting a result, the mode of passion. And not knowing really what to do and, you know, not being aware of proper time, place, circumstance, dealing like this. You just know it's done. Or you make up your own. Then it takes on ignorance. So the point is one has to understand that the culture is meant to bring one back to Godhead. If it's used by one in the mode of goodness for pleasing Krishna. But if not, then it can have it keeps one in the material world. One may be get a favorable material position for following it. But this is not considered very good. By those who are interested to go back to Godhead, this is a very low platform. But now of those not interested to go back to Godhead, it is a very high platform. Because if one follows properly, generally one finds oneself is always kept within the human form of life, there or higher. So now, if we have a situation where we have those, we are taking not necessarily only those from very high class families who know their gotra. Gotra means your particular family line, which of Brahma's sons you have descended from. You understand? In India, in any cultured family, they know. Our family line will go back to Brighu, or go back to Gotama, or go back to Kardama, or Kasyapa, or like that. They know. The whole line goes back. They don't know back. And they should be able to say their lineage back 7 generations. That's expected that you know who your grandfather is, great-grandfather. You know, father, you know your father, right? Grandfather, great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, like that, 7 generations back. That's considered a proper family, you know? So all the royal families, the aristocratic families, any proper family will know that. And they also know the gotra, means past 7 they may not know, but they know who it went back to from Brahma. Because from Brahma, then all he expanded all of his sons like that, and then they expanded the universe. So that means everybody goes back to the sons of Brahma. So that is understanding the gotra like that. Right? You get onto this one. Really good tangent, this one. Oh, we're trying to point out. So this is one standard. Now, if one doesn't know all these things, generally one finds that one has come from a kind of upbringing that has more passion or more ignorance in it. And this more passion or ignorance then creates many times a lack of patience, lack of tolerance, lack of concentration, all these things. So the preaching mission is not just for those very aristocratic and high class culture people. It's for anybody who understands that they are servant of Krishna. Therefore, this system, it's the essence and it's the best. So it's an interesting thing is that in the Kali Yuga, when people are the least qualified, many times the most essential and the best processes are given. Because otherwise, you know, there's very little chance. If you had to sit down and do the whole mechanical Bhuta Shuddhi, there'd probably be very few people who could do it. So then the essential point of just, instead of starting from the bottom up, mechanically you start from the top down by the spiritual process. Adjust the spiritual, that adjusts the ego, that adjusts the intelligence, that adjusts the mind, that adjusts the senses, adjusts the body. It's a very, very nice automatic system. Like that. You just have to sincerely try to understand and appreciate the meanings of the mantras, right? Means the other is by a mechanical process of going through each thing that you're getting the step-by-step effect. This one you're simply saying two prayers and that's all. But its real effect comes when one meditates and concentrates on what is happening in these prayers. So though it's very quick and very simple, it's still, its working principle is that change of heart that is happening by thinking of these things and you mean these things. So if you say these mechanically, one of course will get some benefit, but one won't get that much benefit. Because there hasn't been any concentration, there hasn't been any sacrifice, right? There hasn't been any austerity like that. There hasn't been any charity of giving oneself. You understand? These things aren't there. You just said the mantras and that's it. So if one wants to just be on that platform, it doesn't matter, then one should use the mechanical system, because then it works. It's gross, and it works. I mean, it's the grosser of the subtle processes. And this, the other one, is the subtlest of the subtle processes. Right? And we see, yeah. Okay, is there any questions on that? Yes. Austerity and sacrifice. Austerity means that we go through some trouble. You know, there's generally going to be some physical or some mental trouble. You know, like we got to take our bath and it's cold, or we have to cook, it's hot. That's austerity. You know? Sacrifice means yajna, where we perform devotional activities. Like we chant japa, that's sacrifice. We do Harinam Sankirtan, that's sacrifice. You know, we preach, that's sacrifice. We do some service for Krishna, that's sacrifice. Understand? They're connected. It's just like you're going to cook for Krishna, it's hot. So the cooking for Krishna is the sacrifice. The austerity is that you're doing it when it's hot. Right? So they're connected like that. These three are all done. So the charity, yourself, or paraphernalia, like that, is being given, offered. Anything else here? Yes.
Just kind of clear up the point of consciousness. Just like
you can speak louder.
To just understand the point of consciousness. So, in the case of the cow, so it's consciousness. But isn't that the false? Is that the false ego you mean when you say the consciousness?
Yeah, yeah. It means they identify as a cow. They think they're the body. So they're in ignorance, like that. You can't come up to a cow and say, "My dear cow, you're eternal servant of Krishna," and all this and that. It'll just be looking at you and wondering if you're going to give it some grass or not, or scratch it under the chin, or take it for a bath or do something, it's not going to take what you say that seriously. Right? But because they give milk for Krishna and all that, then that's taken as service by Krishna. You know, and we see that they're doing like this. But the individual living entity is in ignorance. Right? You understand? It doesn't mean that the milk's in ignorance or the body is in ignorance or their service is in ignorance. They're ignorant that they're doing service, but they get the credit for doing that service. Interesting. So many things are happening at once. Like the Brahman may be situated on the platform of Vijnanamoy, understanding they're not the body and all this. And they're interested in, you know, their main dealings are within the realm of Brahman. But that's generally a realized Brahman, or at least an advanced Brahman. But their main interest may be in something lower than that. Like Drona was interested in politics. He's a Brahmin. He had all the qualities of a Brahmin. You know, he's very austere, tolerant, all these different things. But his field of interest was politics, like Chanakya. So Chanakya, he was interested in politics. And this is what he taught. This is what he knew. This was his field of Brahminical study. Right? So he was absorbed in those things. When he wanted, you know, he would do things for results and all these things. Therefore, what he says, as far as dealings with the material world, how things interact, he's an authority. He knew what he was talking about. Very intelligent, very well read. Everyone accepts. But we don't look to him for devotional direction. That wasn't there. You know, so that's left. So one has to be able to work with this. It's many times that there's many things happening at once. Someone may be very austere, very simple, this and that, but be totally interested in karmakanda results. Like I knew one brahmachari who was from the Gaudiya Math, but he used to live in ISKCON. And he would only do menial service, wasn't interested in any other kind of service. You just give him something to do, cut sabji, wash pots, go out and do peon work, you know, deliver things to people, go around, this, nothing. He would generally walk everywhere. And when I met him, he was probably like around 50 years old. You know, he's still living a simple brahmachari and this and that. And, you know, I remember when we first met him, a bunch of brahmins, somebody asked him, "You don't want to get married?" He says, "No." He says, "Well, you know, what's your plans? Why, you know, you're doing all these things, what's your purpose?" Says, "I want to go to the heavenly planets." I said, "Well, why? Why you want to enjoy yourself? Why all this?" He says, and then he started glorifying how wonderful is the heavenly planets, how beautiful the women are there, and everything like that. He says, "Well, you don't want to get married here?" He says, no. "Here they're like frogs. You should see there, yes." So he was totally into going to the heavenly planets. But he was going to do that through devotional activities. Because the Bhagavatam, it says, you know, if you want liberation, you want to go to the heavenly planets, or you want to go back to Godhead, you approach Krishna. So he was following that. And so it's a very interesting thing, is that very austere, very simple, not into sense gratification at all here. Because he knew if he held out here, then what he would get there would be, you know, he would consider better, more interesting. Yeah. But you get maybe a lot of people is that they don't realize necessarily. Subtly, they, unconsciously, that's what they want. He was 100% conscious of what he wanted. You know, it's like his point is this place is terrible. It's a cesspool. There's nothing here to enjoy. I'm not interested. But I am interested in what's on the heavenly planets. Like that. It's very... So the whole point is one has to see. That's why you have some... The Shastra... The normal thing is someone who lives simply, then they have more simple, more pure desires. Someone who's living with more facility has more interest. But the Shastra is always to throw that off to show that that's not always right. that there's more to the equation than just what you see externally, then they always show the person who has nothing but is totally attached to someone who has so much and is not attached at all. That's, these stories are always being brought out, you know, or the, yeah, like that. There's so many stories like that. Therefore, the purpose that we think about what's going on, we go deeper into what's happening. So it's not just that we're externally working, that's enough. We also have to change our consciousness. That I do the ritual, that's good. That means we're pious, we're religious, we're following God's order, we're surrendered. But we should also see that our consciousness is being surrendered. So in the beginning, just that we're doing the activities, that is the surrender. Because we're so used to doing other activities. So if we just try to follow and just, you know, do the rules and regulations, then that is enough. That is the beginning. But as we mature and then those activities become habit, it's not difficult to follow, then we have to start purifying the consciousness. We have to start upgrading the consciousness. It means the consciousness is naturally being purified as we do service. But we have to make a concerted effort. Otherwise, the consciousness will get diverted to other things, like G mentioned, you know, into the heavenly planets, though not, you know, like that. You'll think that I joined devotional service and everything material and spiritually should be perfect, right? But one doesn't find that in the material world. One gets close to it in the heavenly planets. They're devotees, everyone's generally nice there. Everyone looks very nice, you know, everything they eat's nice, the arranged buildings are nice, the gardens are nice, they sing nice, everything's nice. Right? But unfortunately, in that niceness, they have a tendency to forget about the Lord. That is the problem. Therefore, the devotees don't think it's very nice. You know, serious devotees, because they're not looking for that. Kunti was not looking for that. After all her prayers to the Lord, then she's now the queen mother, right, of the emperor of the world. You know, their position has been avenged, their kingdom has been returned. You know, and we're talking about, you know, what, a long time, you know, 100 years or so that they've gone through trouble. They've finally got it. What was due to them naturally without any endeavor, they've had to fight and be bothered for 100 years or so. Right? They've gotten it. But now, when she offers her prayers to Krishna, she says, I would rather be back in the forest with all the troubles, because then I always remember you. Because now everything's so nice and wonderful and everything's perfect materially, but the tendency is to forget you now. So the serious devotees, they do their work, their prescribed duties. If good facility comes, fine. If good facility doesn't come, fine. Point is that we can do service and remember Krishna. Right? Because if we have facility, we might become attached to it. So we're not looking for facility. If it comes, we use it in Krishna's service. Right? More comes than we need, we give it away. Does that make sense? Okay. So we should end here for Julan. So tomorrow we'll start with a preliminary worship of the Lord's, of the paraphernalia, and then the spiritual master. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.